Okay, so let's hear about Flossie and the Dark Lady. So at the end of February in 1883, Whanganui had a huge flood, and parts of that river were completely flooded. There was lots of logs coming down the river for days on end. Locals saw logs and a whole lot of debris floating down the river, washing up on the beach at the end. So no one was really surprised when the body of a little girl also washed up on the beach, and her head very bruised by the bobbing logs. And the police identified her as 3 or 4 year old Phoebe Veitch, who was known as Flossie, daughter of 23-year-old Phoebe Veitch, her mum. And Phoebe, the mum, had told her neighbours and her employers that she was sending young Flossie away to a dark lady and would never see her again. And when the police apprehended her and questioned her, she denied all knowledge of the child's whereabouts. Then she said Flossie had fallen in the river, and later still, she said that the child's father had thrown her into the water during an argument. Goes through the coroner's inquest, through the magistrate's court, into the Supreme Court, where Phoebe stood trial for murder and was sentenced to death. So that's the real bare bones of that story. But telling it at the time was way, way more complicated than that. And actually finding out about it is really complicated as well when you look at police and court records. It's a real detective story to piece it back together into a coherent story. So if we look at it again and flesh out the bones of the story, a whole lot of other stuff starts to emerge. So let's look at Phoebe. She had three children by three different men by the time she turned 20. And her first child was born when Phoebe was just 14 years old. And she was living in Nelson, working as a cook, probably, in her uncle's hotel. And she said this was the result of a misfortune. She moves to Fielding, and 12 months before Phoebe gets married to Robert Veitch, she has another child. And Robert is the father. 3 months after this marriage, she has another child to a different father as well. And this young girl was known as Flossie. Phoebe said she'd known Flossie's father when she was working in Nelson, where he had worked as a cook in her uncle's hotel. His name was Frank, or Sam Timaru. She didn't really know his name. But anyway, he was known around the traps as Darkie Sam on account of his mixed racial heritage. And Darkie Sam had followed her to Fielding, and in exchange for the humongous sum of £5, Phoebe visited his room one evening and, quote, fell in the family way. £5 is a lot of money. It's if Phoebe's working as a prostitute, that's not the going rate. That's a huge amount of money. Anyway, that's what she said he had paid. So her husband, Robert, never asked who was the father of this kid, and Phoebe never told. And Phoebe and Robert lived together happily for a couple of years until Robert became bankrupt, and Phoebe had to work to support the family. So this woman's not 20 at the moment, remember. And the day following a court appearance, probably for bankruptcy, Robert gets up at 3:45 in the morning, says to his wife he'll be back in time for breakfast, and never returns. So Phoebe starts working as a domestic servant. She takes in washing and needlework, which a lot of women were doing because they could do it in their home and look after their kids at the same time, and tended to her blind mother. The story gets worse. Phoebe was quite sick herself. She was battling some type of illness. It was cancer, maybe, or lupus, which is a degenerative disease that affects only women, and which destroyed part of her nose and her face. It sort of eats away the bones if it's not treated, as of course it wasn't, and it impaired her speech as well, so she had lots of trouble talking. When she died later on, her death certificate confirmed the disease as a type of syphilis, so it wasn't cancer at all. But anyway, she's pregnant again, not sure who the father is, and she moves from Fielding to Whanganui just 2 weeks before the death of young Flossie. And she moves there because there's a lot more chance of getting some work in Whanganui, and people don't really know her. And I have a feeling that going to somewhere that she's not known is quite important to her. And again, she starts taking in a little laundry work, something she can do in her own home. But it looks as if she mainly supported herself and her family by working as a prostitute. So with three children to three different fathers and a fourth on the way and her face disfigured, she's hard of hearing and having trouble talking, she, I think, was something of a friendless outcast in Whanganui. But like lots of people at the time, she really, really wanted to be respectable, and she really focused on keeping herself and her kids fed and clothed. And possibly the prospect of a fourth child on the way was just way too much for this struggling mother. Now, perhaps not surprisingly, the police didn't believe the story about the child's death. They didn't believe that there was an argument with the father on the wharf and the father threw the child overboard. But they searched thoroughly for this bloke called Darkie Sam, and they sent out what was called a missing friends notice, and I'll just pass this around to you. This is from the Police Gazette from 1883. It's a missing friends notice, and you can just see the type of information that goes sent around to all stations as they start to try to find this Darkie Sam, the guy that Phoebe said was Flossie's father. Now, he's a really, really murky and dodgy figure at the time, very uncertain racial origins. Phoebe had no idea where he came from or where he was. She said at some points he was Fijian, she said he was Chinese, she said he was Anglo-Indian, Indo-Scottish, and if you look at that, it says he's a Negro as well. That's the term that's used. And Sam Frank, whatever his name was very good at changing his appearance, according to Phoebe. So sometimes he'd cut his hair really short and had a big black moustache. At other times he wore a big black curly wig and a full face of whiskers. And he dressed really well and he dressed himself up. He wore a lot of jewellery, he carried a lot of weapons. He had a big gold ring on his finger and he wore this sort of glass pin thing on his chest. And if you looked carefully, apparently you could see three naked women and a naked man through this sort of tie pin type thing. And he carried a sheath knife most of the time and a double-barreled pistol, which they said he kept hidden in the breast pocket of his jacket. I find that quite hard to figure out how you can hide a double-barreled pistol in your chest pocket. It's about a foot long, but anyway, that was what was said. It's interesting, Pia reviewed an article for something recently, and the guy was actually doing some research on this bloke, and it's just completely coincidental that someone I looked at a while ago turns up again. The guy lived in Nelson. He'd had a conviction for sex with underage women at some point. He was a very good rugby player and the locals really liked him, but he had this sort of really dubious past as well. The image, I think, that Phoebe creates of a young white woman and a pretty dodgy character was quite powerful at a time. So if you think around Whanganui, 1880s, not that long ago, there's lots of conflict going on in that town, and I think locals were sort of got a little bit of a head of steam up, which is partly why the police went to investigate this pretty weird story about this guy. Surprisingly, the cops found about a dozen or so guys that could fit this description, working as cooks and waiters and hotel people around places like Napier and Whanganui and Nelson. And these blokes all formed a loose network. They all knew who this guy was and they all knew Phoebe. They were all sort of circulating, working in the same pubs and hotels around town. And the information these blokes provided allowed police to really piece together this guy's biography. But they didn't find any sign of him, and they found no sign that he'd been in Whanganui at the time when Phoebe said he was meant to have thrown the kid in the water. But regardless of that, the whole description of this bloke had created a real sensation in Whanganui, and all the people who flocked to the court to hear this case, and there were hundreds who went to court to listen to it, were completely agog waiting to find out what was going to happen next, and they weren't actually disappointed. Because while the police didn't find Darkie Sam anywhere, they added their own little touch of melodrama to the court. So they just grabbed some bloke with long hair and darker skin and brought him into the court and waited for him and Phoebe to recognise each other. And of course, that didn't happen. And both of them, Phoebe and the bloke, were left sort of in this bemused thing, you know, what's going on here? And it was just a little test to see if she was on the level, which of course she wasn't. So the drama didn't end there. If you can imagine this courtroom and lots of people going in there and this going on, and then the judge does the summing up the jury sentence, not sentence her, they find her guilty of murder, and just before the judge can say this is what the sentence is, her lawyer got up and said, look, she's actually pregnant now. If you're pregnant and you get sentenced to death under the law at the time, you can have your sentence commuted, thank you, if you are proved to be pregnant. So trying to decide whether or not she was pregnant became a huge issue in and of itself. And for the first and only time in New Zealand legal history, a judge orders a jury of matrons to get together and to ascertain whether or not Phoebe was pregnant. If she was found to be pregnant, it would be a respite on her sentence of death. Now, this jury of matrons is a really, really, really old law, legal thing. It happened in the UK and it happened in Europe, where New Zealand's legal traditions came from. So if a woman was there in court and her sentence carried a capital charge, and if she were pregnant, a group of women would be brought in and they'd go out the back and they would have to examine this person to make sure she was actually pregnant and the fetus had moved. It hadn't been used in the UK for around 30 years, never ever been used in New Zealand. So what the judge does is he gets a list of 26 matrons, i.e. married, respectable married women, summons them all to court. They don't all come, 23 of them come, and 12 of them get selected to go out the back room with some blankets and figure out whether or not Phoebe is pregnant. And actually deciding on this was a hugely long and drawn out affair. And after around 5 minutes, the forewoman opens the door, peeks out and says, can we have some medical assistance, please? We can't figure this out ourselves. And then she peeks out the door and says, can we have some blankets? And an hour later, they're still not certain whether or not she's pregnant. And this male medical expert they get in doesn't seem to be any help, which is not really surprising, because if you've done that stuff on women's health, you'll realise that men at this time aren't really involved in anything to do with childbirth. Midwives and women handle this all. Doctors, male doctors, have nothing much to do with it. So eventually they decide that she's pregnant. They open the door, they ask the judge to clear the entire courtroom, which he does, and they come out and sort of whisper away, yes, she is pregnant. And that verdict secures her respite from the death sentence. So that's Phoebe's story.